Welcome to AM Best Audio.
With fewer face-to-face business interactions in the last year, you might expect to see a quieter employment practice liability market. Surprisingly, there are still a number of challenges facing the market. Joining us now is Chris Williams, Employment Practice Liability Product Manager at Travelers. Chris, thanks for speaking with us today.
Meg, thanks for having me. Looking forward to the discussion.
Chris, what are driving those challenges?
So I'd break it down, Meg, really into four buckets. And let me start with the first one is COVID-19. There were a significant number of layoffs that happened last March as government shutdown orders came down. And historically, when you've seen an increase in layoffs, you've seen an increase in EPL claims. For many, the pandemic created a whole new working environment, working from home, especially with children. That created a lot of challenges. There were new statutory frameworks that were put in place in terms of the Family First Coronavirus Response Act that imposed obligations on employers in terms of paid family leave and paid sick leave. So that's bucket one. Bucket two, it's social inflation, this sort of concept that there's been an increase in cost of claims due to societal trends of increased jury awards, plaintiff-friendly decisions. And if you look at EPL cases from 2015 to 2020, the median verdict saw a 252% increase. Similarly, along that social inflation trend, the number of retaliation claims or the percentage of retaliation claims has increased each year since 2003, and those tend to be very difficult for employers to defend. The third trend I'd say is BIPA, the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act. That's an act that provides that if an employer or is gonna use a fingerprint scan or a voice print or a facial scan, they have to get a signed disclosure from the employee. Employers use that technology for time tracking purposes because you can't basically take your coworker's thumb and scan them in and out of work like you could with a time card. But in some cases, they haven't followed the proper law in that case, and they haven't gotten a signed disclosure from their employees. And there's been a significant increase in class action cases. So we saw 220 claims in 2019. That was up to 264 in 2020. Other states are also considering similar legislation. And again, that wasn't really an issue on anyone's radar prior to 2019 in any significant format. And then I'd say that the fourth overall trend is sexual harassment. Recent trends around political and social empowerment have led to an increase in sexual harassment claims. If you look at the EEOC numbers on that issue between 2016 and 2019, they saw an uptick of 68%, which is sort of similar to what we've seen at Travelers overall. Sort of interesting as people have been working from home, right? I think we've seen a decrease in those claims, but as the economy starts opening up and people start going back to work, I think you might see an increase in those claims.
So how has the COVID-19 virus impacted EPLI claims?
So I'd say overall, we've seen an influx of claims that we hadn't started back at the commencement of January of 2020. And let me just give you a breakdown of the types of claims we've seen. So for example, an accommodation for disability issues, an employee might request that they have the ability to continue to work from home because they're at a heightened risk if they contract COVID-19. And if the employer denies that request or does not engage in the interactive process with the employee, they could be sued for violating the Americans with Disabilities Act. Seen some retaliation claims. For example, an employee at a retail establishment may ask for additional safety protection, like a plastic shield at the checkout counter, face mask, hand sanitizer. And if that request is denied and the employee is terminated, we've seen some retaliation claims coming out of those scenarios. We've seen discrimination claims involving Asian Americans and how they've been treated in the workplace. And we could see going forward claims by people who've declined to take the vaccine, alleging they've been discriminated against based on their sincerely held religious beliefs or because of a disability. I'd say Jackson Lewis, one thing that's pretty interesting is they track the number of lawsuits that have been filed related to EPL that are COVID 19 related. And so far there's been 2,000 lawsuits that have been filed, and that doesn't include demand letters or EEOC charges or things of that nature. The bulk of those claims allege retaliation and disability and discrimination issues. The majority of them have been filed in the healthcare field and retail. Geographically, most of them are brought in California, New York, Florida, and New Jersey.
So can we talk a little bit more about the claims related to vaccines? Can employers force someone to get vaccinated?
So I'd say if an employer wants to mandate the vaccine for their employees, the prudent thing they should do is they should go talk to an employment lawyer before making that decision. I think generally it's fine for employers to encourage their employees to take the vaccine. But there's some risks associated with mandating the vaccine, and I can walk you through some of those details if you'd like to hear about them, Meg. So Littler Mendelsohn did a survey, and there's really a small percentage of employers that are actually planning to mandate the vaccine. But generally, the EEOC has issued guidance that the employers could mandate the vaccine, but there are some challenges associated with that, and that... One of the things, if you're going to administer a vaccine, there's some pre-screening questions that you'd want to ask. And those pre-screening questions could implicate an ADA's provision on disability inquiries, which the EEOC prohibits. So you cannot ask an employee to disclose their disability. So if the employer administers the vaccine, and they have to ask those pre-screening questions, they really have to show that it's job-related and consistent with business necessity. So given all those issues, I think it's prudent to really engage an employment lawyer before making a decision to mandate the vaccine. And then there's really a bunch of exceptions where the employer cannot mandate the vaccine. And there's some other reasons why you'd want to talk to a lawyer. If an employee has a disability, and in particular an allergy to a component in the vaccine, the employer should engage in the interactive process with that employee. Similarly, if the employee has sincerely held religious beliefs, which are opposed to vaccinations, the employer should consider some kind of accommodation for those issues. Pregnancy is another category. And then a number of states have already enacted law or are considering laws which would ban employers from mandating vaccines. So the employer would want to consider those statutes as well and make sure they're in compliance with state law.
Have there been any claims related to people working from home?
So we've certainly seen some claims in terms of people who are requesting to continue to work from home because of a condition that puts them at a heightened risk for contracting COVID-19. We've seen some wage and hour claims. One of the challenges for employers is how do you track employees who are working from home and their hours? And many folks, right, if you have young kids at home and they may need help with homework, some of those employees probably aren't working a traditional work day. They're just because it's not feasible to do so. So they may be working later in the day and into the night off and early in the morning to get their work done. So sometimes tracking those hours. There's what I call a group of sort of Zoom etiquette claims as well, involving people maybe not being appropriately attired on Zoom calls, employees having inappropriate displays on their backgrounds, like somebody posted women in bikinis as their Zoom background, and instances of people being inappropriate on Zoom calls without knowing that their cameras and microphones were on.
And you mentioned California as a difficult state for EPLI. Can you walk us through what's going on there?
Yeah, so California is a challenging place. And if you look at the average closed claim in California, it's more than 260% higher than what we see in the rest of the country. the law firm of Kaufman, Borges, and Ryan had done a survey, and they'd looked at sort of the claim settlements over $2 million from 2015 to 20. And not surprisingly, 20% of those settlements were in California. If you look at four of the top 10, those were brought in California as well. So that raises the question, well, why is California such a challenge? And I'd say a couple things. The plaintiff's bar, when cases settle, they rely on verdicts, and California is no different than anywhere else. But the verdicts just tend to be higher in California than you see elsewhere in the country. California is challenging, partly because the wages there are 15%. The median wages are 15% higher in California than they are countrywide. I'd say the law is broader, too. So Title VII, the federal statute that applies to prohibits race discrimination, gender discrimination, and such, that applies to employers with 15 or more employees. Whereas FEHA, the Fair Employment and Housing Act, that applies to employers with 5 or more employees. There's additional classes that are protected by that statute. So before the Supreme Court decision came down last year, California already had protections in place for gender identity and gender expression. Marital status was already included. And also sort of they recently amended that that race now also includes your hair texture and protective style. So there's just a broader set of protections that are available to employees to bring claims under. And similarly, the FEHA statute in California doesn't have any caps like exist under Title VII in terms of the damages that an employee could claim.
Chris, thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We've been speaking with Chris Williams, Employment Practice Liability Product Manager at Travelers. For AM Best TV, I'm Meg Green.
Looking to get the full attention of the insurance industry? We have the platforms that will do just that. Whether it be AM Best TV, AM Best Audio, Best Review Magazine, or Best Day. Find out more by calling AM Best Advertising Sales at 908-439-2200, extension 5399, and have a great day.